That's me. I'm going to allow the Zoom joiner under the name of David Cook to report as well. Well,
Right. Can I be heard?
yeah, if you ask Ian to respond, let's see whether the everything is working okay.
Can you hear me, Ian?
Yes, hello there. Good evening,
Good,
everyone.
good. Thank you. So you won't be able to vote on anything this evening, but good that you're listening in. You feeling all right? Or, well, obviously you're not, but feeling
Just the cold. I thought I would spare giving it to all of you guys. So.
very kind. Yeah, good. Okay. We'll open the meeting and
Oh, I've got Jill Powell joining us as well on Zoom.
and take apologies for absence, which are Ian and Martin from the Parish Council, and move on
Well,
to
I'm Vinny, Dr. Vinny.
and Vinny, of course, all of whom are. Have illnesses. Moving on to interests, just to advise that I have filled in two dispensations in respect of item 130(1) and 130(2). We'll leave the meeting on zero carbon, but dispensations to stay regarding the Community Land Trust.
Graham, we have to make sure that everybody in the council is happy with that. The system is that as soon as assuming that council is happy with that, I will sign off the form. The first one is the zero carbon project, and you have requested to address the meeting before withdrawn. Okay, that's one category in which you have to do that. And the reason being is that you are a member of that group. Can I have other councillors?
As far as that one is concerned, then I'm fine with
Is
the
everybody happy
dispensation.
with that? No, okay, in which case, as I say, that's approved and I will sign that one off. The second one is for the other item at 130. Point three, which is the Community Land Trust item. Now that item also involves Graham and indeed Norton as well. But under the dispensation rules, you can apply for a dispensation if it would result in the meeting being in quorate. And that's in line with the HAPTC guidance, can be granted because the meeting would otherwise be in quorate to allow the council to participate. Each application must be considered on its merits. Okay. And the advice that I have given to Graham is that perhaps councillors should consider the nature of the interest and whether it was a, if you like, a financial interest. Pecuniary interest, which is obviously at a higher level, or whether it's an other interest. In this case, it's an other interest.
I mean, it needs to be caught. So there's
Three,
Norton's in that as
three,
well. So
three.
any service.
I mean, my thinking behind this, Chris, is that there is a reason why a lack of quorum is one of the permissible dispensation criteria. Why is it there if it isn't for this kind of circumstance in a small parish council where you can very easily hit the rock bottom on the quorum?
Well, I can't comment because I'm going to
No,
exclude
I
myself on the
think
grounds
that
of
would be
interest for this particular item.
that's not
So
necessary.
I have an interest to declare on that, that's 133.2, and I'll be leaving during the discussions.
Yeah. So it's down to you two guys to represent the council on that, although this decision is obviously not the quorate either.
Yeah, so I'm sorry, so these two can't go into it, so they conflict, get that. So you're saying that we can.
Yes, yeah. What we're asking you to do, Chris, is to allow a dispensation for one of them to enable that decision to be quorate.
So one of them to vote?
Yes, yeah.
I think that's reasonable.
Yeah, I'm fine with
that. Okay, yeah. I mean, it's not a major policy decision, it's not a major sum of money, it is another interest. I think my advice would be different if it was a pecuniary, or definitely would be if it was a pecuniary interest. So, are we all happy with that? Okay. Yeah. In which case, I would sign off that one as well. Then.
Great.
Okay.
Thank you. I'll be sending more about that until we get to the item. Okay, I've gone through four minutes of the French Council of March. Is everyone happy with those?
Yeah, those we accept.
Yeah,
okay. So let's move on to kind of issues and public participation. The draft minutes of the annual parish meeting have been issued. They won't be voted on until the next parish meeting, but obviously people can comment on them. I'll ask Tom to cover the bulldog extension when Tom has his slot. Police matters. I'll also cover that the next two items we've already referred to, and we'll raise those further on in the agenda. As on the cycle and pedestrian link to Ashford Station.
So sorry, Graham, I always get slightly confused with the protocol here. There's a number of things here which obviously came up at the annual meeting, which I think we need to discuss kind of how we're taking these things forward. Are you saying that they're going to, these are just noting that those items were raised in the minutes and we'll come on to them in a minute?
Because any decisions, is general, any decisions or any proposal, decisions need to be taken when we're in session, not outside.
Got it.
But obviously, members of the public, and you can comment in this session and in this part of the agenda, and members of the public can comment. But if any decisions,
again, you can point me in the, if I'm saying the wrong thing at the wrong time, but there are a number of things there, like, for example, on the police matters. I think as a parish council, we should be encouraging, as I think we perhaps have done, but continue to encourage signing up to the new system that Hertfordshire Police has just rolled out. So is that appropriate to talk about this now or later?
Well, there's a few items under police matters. We'll still be in open forum, so let's take them as they come up. This is really just primarily to note. Same with pavilion upgrade and playground improvements. Steve can comment on the war memorial under his session. So, ongoing consultation under 125.2. Has anyone noted any response or received any responses regarding the outreach post office service or demand?
No,
nothing. So I can't remember the exact date when we said we'd go back to Nikki to talk.
I'm not sure we did actually.
I think we said we would raise it at the parish meeting and then perhaps let it run through to the end of either the end of March or the end of
April. The parish meeting has been out to the website sign-ups, it's been in the village news, it's been on notice boards. And send it out again to the sign-ups. It's been pushed onto the hub as well.
Right. Let's give a final reminder via the push notification, and then if we don't receive anything, then let's respond to Nikki accordingly.
Did we give a deadline? Because that always focuses people's minds.
Yeah.
It wasn't right.
Okay, perhaps I need to communicate with Nikki to see what her vision is on the deadline.
Yeah, little bring will have a further on. The building upgrade to and improvements to the playground. Affordable housing survey, that the deadline is 30th of April. I picked up some correspondence today that the link doesn't seem to be working.
But yeah, somebody emailed me and I tried it immediately and I couldn't get it to work either. So I emailed the guy at CDA Hearts and he hasn't come back yet.
Right. I responded via that link earlier on a few days or so ago, so it was working then.
Yeah, it definitely has been working because it's something a little bit over the weekend.
So this is the SurveyMonkey site?
Yeah.
All right, because I checked it out and it was working fine. This was last Saturday, I think.
Right. Yeah, it was certainly working on Sunday.
Yeah.
Right.
All right.
Anyway, so we've done the right thing by notifying.
Yeah. If it hasn't replied by the morning and it's still broken, I'll change it.
That needs to be fixed quick.
Yeah, go on.
Okay, so police matters. They dropped into the office earlier this week after their engagement event at Belfast Pond and had a reasonable level of interest. Considering the weather. was anything of particular note today?
I think there was a reasonably successful event and they continue to kind of engage on that kind of thing, which is useful.
Yeah. The poster project with school that has advanced, will continue to advance once they open their new financial year and they've got some funding to do the artwork, to finalise the artwork, and will then get quotes. If you look at the accounts, you'll see that they've just made the contribution for the 23-24 financial year because we shared the cost of printing the posters and they're open to doing the same thing again this year.
So who's sort of managing that from our end?
I have time to go. And last year I went into the school and there was a photo session with the kids and kids involved and Mr. England, and they're very happy to involve the kids because it raises their awareness of being in the community, and they have their parents on the shoulder when they exceed 20 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And the third item being the change from OWL to Parks Connected.
Yeah.
If you're signed up to OWL, you should get an automatic, should have had an automatic.
It came on the first paper.
Reminder, I mean, you still have to sign up to Parks Connected, but I think, it's a good scheme. Yes.
Thank you, Chair. Sorry, I just was wondering when it would be best for me to make my comments, whether you want me to do that now, a few items I'd like to speak on.
Okay, yeah.
Thank you. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, sir. Got to the end of that session. A couple of points of order, if I might. Firstly, perhaps through Jane, there was no audio on the last recording. So we had video recording, but no audio. So if you've got an audio file, Jane, maybe you can, I can trouble you to let me have that.
Okay, we'll look into that. Yeah.
I don't think we do.
Well, to be honest, David, I don't know that I have either. There was something went wrong last time with the whole system. It didn't download properly. In fact, to that end, I've had several test sessions, and it's working again as of this afternoon, and it seems to be working now. I have a suspicion that there was an update on Zoom software that for some reason it didn't like, because there's two ways that you can record these things. You can download it to your own device, or you can get it off your account. And neither of it worked well.
And yeah, I had pictures, but no sound.
Yeah.
Went on because Jan knew Jane wasn't.
Yeah.
I tried and I couldn't find it as a recording of either video or audio.
Oh, it recorded fine on video and it automatically downloaded, it just never had any audio.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No,
but I'm looking again, no promises. I must admit I haven't had the time to look again. But Norton and I did several searches for the exit bar.
Thank you. secondly, on dispensations, am I right in thinking that those are in writing? And if they are in writing, I think they probably should have been out of the agenda.
No. If they're available, they can come out of the agenda. But it's, I'm struggling to remember the wording. When it becomes apparent, is the wording. Because obviously, until the councillors have seen the agenda, they may not know that they have an interest to declare. Okay. So there's a bit of a chicken and egg on that one, Dave.
Okay. Yep. The agenda came out, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Right, okay, so.
No. Before then, but anyway, but whenever. Yeah. But it doesn't, there is allowance for that, yeah? It's when it becomes apparent.
Yeah. Okay? But I think the point is, I think the reason the legislation says it's in writing is so that if someone has an objection to that, they have an opportunity to say so.
Oh, you're absolutely right, but we don't know until tonight that three members are in.
Thank you.
Yes.
That's quite awesome. Thank you very much. I also would just like to just ask a question. Are we sure that an inquiry meeting can make a dispensation?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So, because otherwise it wouldn't work, would it? If you think about the logic of it, why is that item there? But when you have this situation.
Yeah, but the granting of a dispensation by an inquiry meeting.
That's fair. Yeah. Because otherwise you couldn't do it, could you, in these circumstances?
It would be impossible. I think it might be helpful if the clerk were able to confirm when we are in the CLT, and she'd give you the advice about CLT, that she has a role in the CLT as its secretary. I think that's something that should be said during the course of the meeting.
That's all we've got to decide. Yeah. That's part of problems that's in the public domain anymore. Okay.
And also, just finally on that, where a declaration of interest involves the chair, the meeting to agree an alternative would be the chair for that item. So, presumably, someone else will chair that item. And on that item, thank you. On that item, I think we had an item at the last meeting saying £20 for people for the group so that people could come along and pay their pound. And then now we've got another item for £90. I think strategically, the parish council has to take a decision at what point is the CLT a self-reliant organisation and at what point is there does the parish council reach the juncture where it feels like further support might be in terms of loans rather than gifts? Because it seems that without some sustainable source of income, and £1 shares still probably feel like they're going to be it, that every time it holds a meeting, it's probably going to need to ask for some money, or every time it pays its annual subscription, it's going to need to ask for some money. So it feels like there isn't a sustainable position. And there is a tendency sometimes to look at the CLT as if it were a subcommittee, and it's not. It's a separate legal entity. So I think it's just a strategic choice here to be made, which is not about whether we've been 90 quid this month or 20 quid last month, but at what point does this institution become self-sustaining? If it doesn't, then where does that leave us? I'd also like to talk about pavilion paperwork, Chair. It seems that we've reached a juncture about the pavilion. And I think it was Mr. Young made a very good point at the AGM that we're not in a position, we don't have the information that allows us to give a view about what we should do with the pavilion. And it feels like one of those situations where actually we need some transparency about what are the costs, how much are we getting in fee income. It feels like it's one of those problems where we need to canvas the skills and abilities that we exist in the village, both in terms of builders, but also intellectually, to say, is there a way of looking at this storm problem other than it's $400,000? Because it feels like that's a bit of a binary sort of dead end. And it feels to me like we come up into, I find myself in the blessed position of agreeing with Councillor Hoffman when he spoke at the meeting, sort of saying, you know, we really need to get all these facts and figures out and down on paper, and we need to understand why we're in this position and what the options are. Because it felt a bit like we were in a bit of a catch-22 situation, and I think Mr. Young spoke for a lot of people when he expressed the sentiment that, you know, we really need to know a bit more about this. So that's the sentiment I have about where we've got to with the pavilion and how we've arrived at, if we don't all pay 30 quid for 10 years, it falls down.
Well, you've raised the point which is further on in the agenda, but in view of the points you've made, I can hopefully sort of cut to the chase on where we are. And my suggestion was going to be that, which is, I think, what we would agree with the meeting, that those details would be provided in the form of a consultation document, which I will draft, which explains, which covers all of those items.
Yeah, I mean, I'm personally in the view that we need to not start again, but it needs a, not a fresh look, but a fairly comprehensive review. Because I think, you know, inflation in the construction industry has been pretty rampant over the last few years. So I suspect the numbers, as I think were made at the meeting, will be very light. I think there are probably other solutions to look into. Certainly we should consider. There's obviously a cost to doing so, because professionals to undertake work, unless there's people or undertake reviews and cost assessments and design and things, you know, it's going to cost money. So we need to draw up a budget for that, I think, to at least review what's been done to date, or to try and harness any professional expertise that the village has got. I know a few people who are architecturally minded in the village that might be able to help with that. Yeah. But, and then there's things like, one of the things that troubled me slightly was around the use of the pavilion. So, for example, I've got three kids, but I think I've been in the pavilion twice in the 10 years I've been in the village, and I'm sure I'm not alone in that. So the degree to which we get the buy-in of everybody in the village to use it or not can't be taken, I think, for granted. I think we need some sort of assessment of what people's views are, because it appears to me there's a very small percentage of people that actually use it on a regular basis and who derive direct benefit from it. And I don't know whether they are paying their proportionate share towards that, not only just the perhaps the renewal, but maintenance, and perhaps that's a reason why it's fallen into disrepair. So I think that there does need to be quite a comprehensive review of where we are, because there'll be a lot of people who I'm sure would love to see it there, but when it comes to actually paying for it, might feel that it's being disproportionately funded by the whole village for a relatively minor set of people. I mean, I don't know. One of my daughters plays for Hackies, which she plays down at Small Games, and they play from the lock-up container, and actually at the rec they play from the lock-up container. They never use the changing facilities, and when we go to other sports clubs in Hertfordshire, they go fully changed. So I don't know when for the men's team, because I don't have have sons. I don't play in the men's team. I don't know whether they use the facility. I don't know whether the cricket team actually uses the showers and the changing rooms, or whether, you know, so is that facility going to be fully used? I don't know. And I think we need to review all of those things before we can come up with a suggestion and a plan, and then possibly putting it back out there to the public for their views.
Yeah, I mean, I think the point you've made is very valid. I don't think they're unique to Ashford by any means. I don't have a vested interest one way or another what happens to it. I just think that before people say don't spend money on pavilion, which professionally or being judged needs money spending on it, I think they need to consider, would they be happy not to have a pavilion that can be used in the community? On the cost, and I think that's something that should be covered in the consultation. On the costs side, it was at, I know, I recognise that there's been high inflation, but you know, one can get taking estimates of what level of inflation in house building costs has occurred. The detailed costs that we've had were only provided a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
So I think there's a big question mark as to whether before the various options and background are taken into account, whether we should really be spending more money on professional fees. Fine if someone within the community is prepared to use their expertise to comment on it, but I think a back to start point and review everything with professional advice at a cost is perhaps going a bit far.
You see, I mean, we're in a chicken and egg situation here, aren't we? I mean, you know, people don't really know what they want to spend unless they know what it's going to be spent on.
Yeah.
And we don't know what to spend it on unless we know what people are prepared to spend. You know, it's circular. So what we have to do is take an iterative approach. So we have to say, look, you know, if a pavilion costs £400K, it would mean an extra, I don't know, £30 on the preset for Band D property.
Yeah.
How does that sound? Or would you prefer something slimmed down, or would you prefer us to get rid of it in, you know, wholesale, just raise the whole site? Mm-hmm. So, you know, we have to sort of take it on an iterative approach. Depending on the feedback, you know, then we can develop a solution.
Yeah.
But we're going to have to go around the circle a few times, I reckon.
No, I think, I mean, yeah.
But, I agree with Chris, we need to, but it, I mean, wouldn't be a good idea to spend a lot on fees before.
I mean, today there have been various documents issued that go into different levels of detail. We haven't actually published, I don't think, the full architect costed repair quotation, or well, not quotation, best effort. But we could do, and we could certainly produce a summarised.
We didn't do the last one. We did the first one that we had to do for the Claybush 106 today. Was published, definitely. That was based on the Sport England costings. But that must be 7 years ago now. It's a long time ago.
Mm.
And then the second one was done slightly differently. And then there was a third one, because the costs of that were... The second one was done by a users group led by the guy who spoke at the meeting for a replacement.
From a specialist.
Then COVID, well, several costumes from several specialists. Then COVID hit and there was a bit of a lull. And then the parish council came back in and said, look, would it be cheaper to renovate? And looked in with very good input from some locally skilled, super qualified people. And I think everyone was a little bit shocked that the costs were pretty similar, because they hoped that a refurb might be cheaper and a bit more achievable.
Yes.
And that's sure the case.
Yes, Jill, come on in. You're muted at the moment, Jill. Can you unmute, please?
Right, I'm here now.
Right.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chairman. It's a bit difficult to actually hear from the recording the sort of total conversation about the pavilion. But have the current users at the moment, say cricket club, football club, have the youngsters used the pavilion every Saturday morning and the pavilion is open for that? Have these people been asked at all about the situation that we're in now?
Well, when we were liaising with the architect over the renovation, yes, they were.
Right.
At least representatives of the clubs were. But, you know, since we got the cost and put out the Jubilee Fund invitation, there hasn't been any specific dialogue again with the users.
Right. Okay, because these are all what I call youngsters who use this this facility. And I would think that if we're looking for people with skills in different aspects of probably renovation, probably I prefer to see, my personal opinion is I prefer renovation rather than rebuild. But, I mean, there's lots of youngsters there. I'm sure I've got lots of skills that could help with that situation if it were to be put to them maybe again.
Yeah, I think one factor that we perhaps ought to take account of if we're going to go into a sort of a broadly based consultation is to include the option of improving or expanding the facilities of the pavilion such that more people from the community could use it. But with the caveat that the community should be careful about not pulling business away from existing services that could be affected by that. Like, for instance, the parish room or the village hall or the URC or rhubarb and mustard and so on and so forth.
Yeah, there's a lot of a fair number of coach trips actually come into the village. And if we were to make the pavilion a bit, you know, if it was renovated and we were to make it a bit more accessible and to coach trips who could, you know, call it as part of their trip to have refreshments there and whatever. I'm not sure. I mean, I'm happy to join in any discussions that you might want to take forward on this subject.
Yeah. Well, I don't see there's any issue with, as part of the consultation, inviting people to join a working group.
Well, perhaps I'll speak to Jane about it a bit more, and
get
something.
Yeah, I mean, the more fundamentally, the more we can engage the whole community, the better. It's felt. I mean, even getting some of the users to contribute to the discussion is difficult. It's a darn sight harder getting the whole community to engage with it. But, you know, because they see other more urgent priorities. But at the end of the day, we either let it fall into further neglect or we have to find a way of spending money on doing something.
Okay.
So what's the next steps then? Because I think we need a working group to garner all these ideas and move it forward.
Well, let me draft a consultation document, circulate that to the parish council and other interested parties to get comments on it, to make sure that it covers all the issues that they want covered. And then when there's a consensus on that, we can push it out and expand into a working group. One question is how long will that take, and the other one is do all the users of the REC actually pay, or I know there's quite a few groups head on there, but whether they pay
for yes, it? Because it's a public open space, it's a recreation, it's actually owned by charity. There's nothing to stop people going along there, kicking the ball around, or indeed having a little group there. But that's over. But use of the pavilion is definitely something that the parish council charges groups for. The only exceptions to that are one-off uses by, for example, the pubs or the beefers who might want the summer do their own. Need some space just to get
through the storage, but that's the other point. Is I suspect, I don't know the numbers, but I suspect the maintenance even for a new pavilion going forward will not be covered by the subscriptions or the contributions that are being made. I suspect that it's being serially underfunded.
That
has been the starting point when parish council have set in their budget the fees for particular groups.
Yeah, but then it wouldn't have fallen to disrepair if, with playing devil's advocate. So the cost must be higher than the
You're absolutely right. I mean, the key. I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, I think that also depends on the method of construction. I mean, it was done in a style. And what is really something.
Yeah, but it's all going to be factored into the same thing. It's not only the upfront cost of delivering it, but then there's the maintenance going forward to make sure it's sustainable.
I mean, there hasn't been a sinking fund to replace the whole building. I think that's the short thing, isn't it? The roof needs doing. There's no heating, no insulation.
The cricket club put quite a bit of money into renovating the old pavilion 2 or 3 years ago. So they might be prepared to contribute to the renovation of this one.
Mm-hmm.
They painted the outside of it. I don't think there was much more done to do.
No, they didn't do much more. Probably not, no. Okay.
Looked very nice from a distance.
Anyway, it made it look better.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Jules. Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think somebody's made a point that I'd sum up as this, the people who are using it on a day-to-day basis, the taxpayer or the users, it feels like what we've got here is a maintenance deficit. It feels like we've built up a maintenance deficit over the years and we haven't probably done enough maintenance on it and it's now caught us out. And if we don't paint our windows at home regularly enough, then we end up having to replace them. And it feels like we've got ourselves into that space. So we're asking future people to pay for the fact that not enough money has been spent on it in the past. Well, it wouldn't be in a sort of, it's going to fall down if we don't do something with it, if we'd have maintained it.
Well, it's
past, ordinary. The past has already happened. So we've got to look at the situation we're in now and what happens in the future. And that's what we're aiming to do.
It's sewage system. The sewage system is out of date and inadequate. It has never had a proper heating system. The roof tiles have come to the end of their useful life.
Well, this is all useful information, I think, to get out into so people understand the scale of the problem and what we're talking about. Thank you, Chair. I'll move on if I may. The housing needs survey. Just a thought for whether or not something that the parish council would want to encourage Bristolians to do. One way that a person who's really struggling to get onto the housing ladder can get onto the housing ladder is to build their own home. And local authorities are required by law to keep something called a self-build register. So one thing that younger people in the village who can't afford to get on the housing ladder could do, and the housing needs survey asks people if they're interested in self-build, and that's one of the boxes you can tick. I wonder if, with the benefit of hindsight, I'd have said this sooner before the survey went out, but I wonder if we should perhaps just make parishioners aware that there is something called a self-build register, and they're perfectly entitled to get in touch with the local authorities. And the local authority, our friends in North Hats, will record that they're interested in the self-build box should ever become available. And you can say what area you're interested. I know this because my daughter's done it because she's had it on the housing ladder, so I declare an interest in that regard. And then the local authority, if it becomes aware of self-pump pots, notifies those people that are on that register so that they can potentially try to procure that. So I guess this is a way really of making sure that people might be interested in that, understand that there is a mechanism for them to register interest with the local authority and then be notified should plots become available. What's your thought, Chair?
Can we ask Tom as well, a question? How does the local planning authority, North Hearts, which does have a system that make people aware of it?
I mean,
I have read about it in the Outlook thing, because I do have a daughter who's interested in it.
I've come across one reference to a self-built plot in 5 years on the planning control committee.
But I'm quite sure that it is in the local plan, definitely.
There might be something.
It is in the local plan.
It's a requirement for a register.
Yeah.
But it's something which we could, in a reminder about the affordable housing, that needs so that we can...
I'm sure so on the North Hearts website or something about it.
Yeah.
Find a reference.
Yeah.
I'll try and find the link to the job.
If we push out a notification, until the end of April, it's still running, and add it into that.
Yeah.
Thank you. I think we're on to 125.5. So Steve.
Okay, I think a great deal to say. I think last time I talked about the street light that didn't have a light on the top of it, and it now does. Did promise that we don't paint it, we put the lights on the top of it, and we haven't done that. Let's try and bring the top of the right side. On the Lucas Lane junction, I heard a conversation about whether or not concrete posts would be acceptable. Concrete post in principle would be. So I asked them whether or not the concrete post that you suggested could be acceptable, and they've got a way to think about that. Mm-hmm. I think their concern is that they would want to see some sort of reflectors on any concrete posts to avoid probably pedestrians falling over them, which has happened on occasions when people have fallen over, particularly the lower posts. There have been instances of people walking into them and falling over, not in asphalt, but that's happened in other places. So I think it's a question about what they would want in terms of concrete posts, and they're still investing.
I mean, they're 500 millimetres in diameter.
Yeah.
That's getting on, certainly above knee height.
Yeah.
So,
right. But
and quite big, you know, sizable. So.
Oh, right, I must be a bit behind the times because I thought the preference was for these balls.
They're trying
to figure out whether or not they consider them to be acceptable. And the initial reaction was a bit sceptical, but they've gone away to consult.
I think, yeah, that might... See, the reason the balls were chosen was because that was a kind of dignified... a dignified addition to the set of the memorial.
Yeah.
And sticking reflectors on them might not be a great
well,
idea.
I think that's why they think the balls might not turn out to be acceptable, because if you can't have the balls without reflectors, you probably don't want the balls. Is I think where they're coming from.
Right.
So they're concerned, I think, potentially mainly about pedestrian safety if it's dark, if there's something that sort of height is evidently
they're thinking about that, and may consider that if the pedestrians don't follow the drop curve route across, then they're at risk of tripping over the curve.
So we're waiting for an answer on that. And we'll have to wait and see whether or not they think they're acceptable.
And what's plan B if they're not acceptable?
Well, I think the alternative is look for some other concrete posts that are acceptable, or go back to metal posts. But I think it's great. I think you put that from the metal posts. I mean, if they're powder coated, then they're clearly much more robust than the painted ones. But if people drive into them, the casing will be damaged, and people will drive into them. So I think it's a question of finding a suitable concrete post. If the balls are judged not to be suitable or not suitable without accoutrements that would render them unsuitable from our point of view. So we'll see what we get to on that.
Okay.
But in principle, concrete posts
and timber posts, so like there's ones like that that are along Silver Street and others that are on the council owned verges are not suitable to be put there. So I think soft and quite attractive, as in soft looking.
Yes, I think my point of view, timber posts would be acceptable. They'd be quite happy with those.
They can be, you know, so high.
I think it's the mass of them rather than the absolute height, I think.
The ones that were put outside the cemetery to stop vehicles in the verge there were put in by highways, and they are much chunkier. Mm. They're not as tall as the metal ones, but they are much wider than the ones at Silver Street.
Mm. So more like 8-inch square, or 10-inch square.
Yeah.
There are some quite slender ones that probably 4x4.
They're the ones that are in.
Which are the regular ones, but there are places where they put signals.
As I said, they were highways installed ones. Yeah.
So wood is an alternative. I've got my next monthly meeting with them is next week, I think, and that's the week after. So I'll get an answer there, and we'll see what we got to.
Okay.
And I'll keep chasing them about the drainage issue as well. I don't think we've made any progress on that since last month, and I think that's still in the head scratching phase, to be perfectly honest. Yeah. They're still trying to identify what solutions.
I think they perhaps they need to go back and look at it in person.
Yes.
To get a feeling of the levels, because it's clearly an issue of levels, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, they should have a set of levels that they've taken. And I had a discussion with them about, you know, is there scope for an additional gully? And they're reluctant to put a gully in front of a drop curb, because if there's someone with a small wheeled a buggy of some sort, the wheels will go down the gully. So if the water is coming from the Lucas Lane direction, then a gully before might get the water to go in. If it's coming across the road, then clearly that wouldn't work. So they're trying to figure out, and say the big problem, I think, as I said before, is that it's very flat. There's very little fall in any direction. And that's why there's so little upstanding on the curb. So I'll keep chasing them on that. Mm. And the final thing I was going to say is, some people have complained to me about the Hartslinks bus being unreliable, and I'm not clear whether or not this is a generic problem. So it would be really useful to have any feedback if people are saying that there are frequent cancellations once they've booked it.
I haven't heard, and I don't know, frankly, on how many occasions in the average day or week it actually runs.
It runs fairly frequently, but a big problem coming up in the future is the fact that all the road closures, and the bus will be going all over the place just to get to Ashford. It's going to cause quite a lot of problems with the timetable. So that's going to
That'll be a problem on the 91, the timetable. I mean, how often, I don't know how often the Hartslinks bus comes to Ashwell.
Because that's the on-demand.
That's the on-demand, yeah. Yeah. And some people have raised with me the fact that there's been and clearly it will happen sometime. There was an occasion last week when I think the driver was ill or something.
Yeah.
Taken ill at the last minute. And obviously, you know, buses will get cancelled if the vehicle breaks down or the driver's sick. But there was kind of a suggestion that this was a not infrequent occurrence of the Hartslinks. So if there's any feedback from the village that there's been an experience of that sort, that would be really useful. Maybe you have to put some feelers out to see whether or not people think there's a problem with its reliability.
Yes.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And then obviously let me know. Yeah.
Excuse me, Chairman. Could I just ask something?
Yes, sure.
Sorry about that. Can I just come back to Steve about the war memorial and the bollards? One of the safety issues, I think, probably would be made better if the street light was more was working. Well, no, it is working, sorry. But if it was made more usable in the tree that is by the bus shelter. Half of the tree has been cut down. I don't know whose problem that is, but if it were completely opened up, the tree, we would see more of the light and would be better for the for that area of the in front of the war memorial to be seen at night.
Yeah. I think that's something.
I don't know who's responsible for that, actually.
I think we've discovered that the Maltings are responsible.
Well, I think we've reached a bit of a brick wall on that. The success was achieved with regard to the hedge, which is on the station side of it, and that was it was determined that that was in the ownership of the end property, and they did have their hedge cut back.
Yeah,
that solved half the problem. The other problem with the big Lawson Cypress, well, there was a debate over who owned it. It's if you take the view that the bus shelter is on Highways land, it's definitely on Highways land. But then I think it was determined that the bus shelter actually encroached on the Maltings land. At the end of the day, nobody wants to take responsibility for it. My understanding is that Highways has the power to cut back anyway, whoever owns it.
They do. I think the problem, and they have done several times, I think the problem is that it will only be a short-term solution so long as the tree remains there. And I think, I mean, so you know, if I was trying to portray Highways in the best light, I would say that they are reluctant to cut more of other people's trees than they need to. They're not horticultural specialists. They forget that trees grow. They cut enough off to solve the problem. They are inclined to ignore the fact that in a few weeks or months, depending on it, the problem will recur because the tree will grow back. So it may be that we just can't get them to come back and trim the trees some more.
Steve, if we got the approval of the whoever is responsible for the Maltings to have the tree removed, would Highways then remove it?
I doubt it.
My understanding is that, certainly from the contact I have at the Maltings, that they'd be quite pleased to have the tree.
Yes.
But they don't regard it as theirs.
No. I've had several conversations with the county council's tree makers about this. And the various other tree issues around the village. And the guy who deals with that is usually very helpful and gets stuff done. He is quite clear that this is not their tree, and he therefore can't spend the council's money on it, other than trimming it to clear the street light, which actually someone else does. So realistically, are we going to get Highways to cut the tree down? I don't think we are. I'm going to ask them again, but I think the answer will probably be the same.
If they cut some more of it out, though, to create more light from the street light, would probably help the situation as regards safety at the where the bollards might be put.
Certainly, having a more effective street light at the junction would be useful, and for everyone's purposes. And the other possibility, I suppose, is we just say, well, we'll move the street light. Maybe that's the easiest solution.
Well, just more tree cut off, I think, probably would help the situation.
Yes, so we can try and get them to cut some off the tree, but that's a temporary solution. I think we probably can see whether the street light is in the ideal position anyway, don't we?
I mean, the other option is for the parish council to fund removal of it. If there was a wish,
well, very expensive. There's quite a thing to get the roots out or whatever as well. Take it right down to the base, it's going to be quite expensive, as you imagine.
Well, I think the roots are affecting their molting sewage system. Be difficult to take the roots out, I think. I don't know. So I hear.
It was kill the roots, that's not.
Yeah.
Yeah. However,
probably have to inject it or something. Like that.
Well,
if someone alleges its effectiveness through its system, they're going to be reluctant to do anything to it.
Well, someone needs to deal with it.
Yeah, well, let's say we get to chop some more off the tree, which would at least be a short term solution.
Yeah.
Do you want me to report it again?
Yeah, that's simple. Yeah, if you
thank you. Thank you very much.
And we'll have a look. I'll have a look to see whether or not the streetlight is really in the right place. And if it's not, I think it might be a case for it needing to be over the station side, for example. Then that might be the best long-term solution. But
it may be.
Yeah.
But if it's clearly in the right place at the moment, without getting a look, I can't remember.
Mm.
We're not then getting to move the streetlight, so it's in the wrong place. So don't do that.
Okay.
Okay.
Anything else?
No.
Right.
Thank you.
Steve,
yeah.
Are we going to have any success with turning the SID landing station mode?
Yes, we can turn that around. I mean, we turned it around, but it's the parish council asked to turn it around.
Yeah, well, they said that, but it was mainly moved up to Newnham Hill. That was station road, I can't remember being mentioned, but perhaps it was.
That's why we turned it around. We can put it. This year we should be able to put it on the list and it turned back, if that's what you want.
Well, because you're going out of the village into a 40 mile an hour. It doesn't make sense.
Well, as I said, we turned it around because you collectively asked for it to be turned around.
Well, I think there's a quiet word, but an escape is now.
The reason I asked them to do it was because I was asked. I've done this in other places as well and said, are you sure? Yes, you're sure. Why do we do that? Well, you asked me to. So we'll turn it. What they won't do is to turn it back the day after they've turned it round when someone says, oh, that was a mistake. They won't turn them round essentially more than, well, they might turn around after 6 months, but generally they need to be there for a year. We can put it on the list to be turned around this year. They'll turn it round.
I think I'll look at this. Let's submit it to an official request to turn it back again on the station bell box.
Yes.
So it's vehicles entering the village.
Yeah,
it's not leaving. Yes. Okay. Thank you. Tom.
I think they should design an automated one.
Yeah.
Reverse it.
24 hours.
Okay. Just anecdotally on the Leeds bus, I happened to stumble across something on the Ashcourt Facebook group where the users of the bus were full of praise for the service.
Yeah.
So it seemed quite popular and well received. Sort of fun. Right. A couple of things where there's no progress to report. Solar farm. Application will come to committee after the election. The town's only meadow footway saga continues, and I heard nothing again this month, and have now recently discovered that there's been a change of personnel in the department there, the enforcement team, and that might explain why they've been so slow to respond. So hopefully we'll get some kind of an answer from them. In the near future, now that they've got a new bus on the post. The soft plastic collection, which I mentioned at the annual meeting, the officer who's got all the information about this said that she'd let me know for sure what was going to happen when she got back from leave, but she didn't say when that would be, and it hasn't happened yet. And what she's told, she said that Bygrave would be included and some of Ashwood. So I think we can deduce from that whatever the route is that the Bygrave route take, where that leads them into Ashwood is the part of Ashwood that will be covered by the extension to the trial. But I'm not familiar enough with the route that extends beyond the frontage of my house. to tell me where that will be. But as I said, she's going to let me know for sure, and I'll pass that information on to her then.
Could you request the whole of Ashford?
No, because this is specific to one particular vehicle and the cruiser that's going to take that route, and they'll be involved in the trial because they've got to do different things than what they normally have. So I can't affect the influence that I'm trying. The board of expansion, I'm thinking that Urban Civic Castle would now kind of just actually going to wait for the election to see what kind of council they're dealing with after the 2nd of May. In terms of the conversation that arose at the annual meeting the other week, a parishioner was quite enthusiastic about setting up some kind of committee or working group to progress the idea of trying to get some kind of contribution from the developers for Ashwell to continue the projects of the station car park and the connection of the footway and potential cycle path between North Hertfordshire and the station, so that we can join up with Cambridgeshire on that. But that, I think, is largely a matter for yourselves. I think very happy to liaise with the strategic sites people on that, but it's early days in terms of that function. But yeah.
Thank you.
And that's all really. There was just one planning application that we talked about last month, which is the 17 High Street. And at the time of, I think at the time of the parish council meeting, there hadn't been a comment from any neighbours, but there had even though it hasn't appeared on the website where it should have on the planning portal. But I've spoken to the case officer, and I'd like to speak to him a bit more about what's going on there, because there might be some complications with the, not just the conservation area and the fact that it's a listed building. I think the owner of the Chessman House is concerned about the stability of it, because it hasn't got a sort of conventional foundation. So that's something that's just on my mind at the moment, and as well to see what the conservation officer has to say about that.
Thank you, Chair. Appreciate that. I know this is something we touched on before, Tom, but the Townsend Meadow thing just feels like it just don't feel right. I mean, it just takes so long. I mean, I'm not blaming you, but if folks don't feel like enforcement has any teeth, you shouldn't be surprised if every person in the village just decides, well, I'll do what I like and I won't bother with planning conditions, because it doesn't feel like the optics are right, that it's taken, you know, it must have been a very profitable development. No affordable housing contribution. It must have been 10 million quid worth of houses. It must have been a highly profitable development. It can't have anything to do with viability. It just doesn't feel right. But they start month after month after month after month after month, year after year, they're just getting away with not living to their obligations.
Yeah. Steve knows something about this as well, because there's a whole period of time when we believed that the developer was reaching an agreement with the county council on this, and it all appears to be on the verge of being signed off. And then in the last minute, it transpired that this hadn't taken place as we thought, and the officers were assuming that something had happened that didn't. Steve filled in details, but that section 278 agreement was never completed. And therefore, we went back to square one, which was the breach of condition procedure. And that was from last autumn, I believe, that we've been trying to follow it up. So it's just been, I agree, it's been a very frustrating process, and you're right to say that, you know, money should be available to enforcement needs to take place, which is why I've taken it up again from the North Hart side of the enforcement.
But it wasn't, sir. Forgive me, Chair, but it wasn't a preoccupation condition. So conditions can be timed, and I thought this was one that was timed.
I think it would be preoccupation.
I mean, why were they allowed to override them from the condition?
No, very true. Well, true. We did point that out at the time.
Yeah.
As soon as it became obvious that occupation had started.
So why are they so reluctant to be a bit more energetic in there?
Because it cost them a lot of money.
Oh.
Well, I can expect that. You know, there was lengthy discussion about the technical aspects. It took a long time before they came up with a solution that was acceptable to County Council Highways from a technical point of view. And then there was a protracted negotiation about the commercial terms. And my understanding is that they were agreed, but the agreement was never signed. Now, you know, we can speculate as to what the developers and motives might have been for doing that, but given this is a public meeting, we probably shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
But that's as I understand it, what happened. And you know, that's where we are.
Is there any, I mean, in terms of learning lessons from this, is there anything that practically, from an operation point of view, either we or North Harts can and should do to ensure this doesn't happen again?
Well, I would agree, and I would say that from our point of view, we need to make sure that the planning department is making sure that it imposes that the conditions, sorry, that are imposed are actually met in full at the right time, and that the mechanisms for triggering the breach of condition or whatever kind of follow through is required are actually in place and being used. And that might be we might have had here a symptom of a personnel problem in terms of lack of staff or overwork and too many of these enforcement things to have to sit through and prioritise. So I'm speculating, but
if I can say, I mean, there were problems with this development right from the start, weren't there, because of the situation when the Planning Commission was granted actually for 3 and 4 bedroom houses, and it became quite apparent from the day that they set foot on the site that they were building 4 and 5 bedroom houses. It was every bit of the whole thing.
Well aware.
Yeah,
not all
agreed by the finance system. Yeah. And at the time, as Tom correctly said, North Harts staffed, and they choose to. I mean, the planning officer told me that they just had to pick their battles. Just couldn't afford to pursue everything.
If I'm right, Chair, forgive me, but at least, you know, with a background in local government, we have to have some honest conversations as leaders with our elected members that says, look, if you want to have proper enforcement, we have to fund 3 staff or 2 staff or whatever kind of staff. Let's not pretend that we can cut the budget for the planning department for enforcement and be effective about enforcement. It's the strategic choice that the councillors have to take about whether or not we're actually going to make the budget if it's a staff shortage.
If it's a strategic choice as well, it might be a staff shortage issue, but it's
not
a result of staff.
Yeah,
the last time I looked for other reasons, North Harts were advertising for 2 and 4 spots.
For a long time, North Harts made a strategic choice not to prioritise enforcement. And there's been a change in that, but it takes some time for that to have any impact. And there's probably needs to be more of a change.
I mean, is a local authority ombudsman that can, you know, that a matter like this could be brought to their attention to oblige North Harts to act in a certain way.
The ombudsman Well, you need to make a complaint to the council, first of all. No one's been able to deal with complaints, but so where the council's own complaints procedure have been exhausted. And the ombudsman is, I'm not quite sure what the ombudsman, and I'm actually sure the ombudsman deals with planning matters either.
They didn't.
Because there are variants, well, they don't deal with all planning matters, but they might deal with this. They don't deal with matters that there is another recourse for.
The other thing, if I may say, the suggestion has been made in the past in relation to other cases that the system of using bonds that other authorities do successfully use should be considered by more parts.
Well, there would have been a bond if the Section 278 agreement had been signed.
Yeah, but
the council would have required a bond, wasn't it? Yes. I mean, that is not a panacea either.
No.
You will all have seen the mess that the Lower Prism Agent, Paul Buck Radio in Royston.
Yes.
They've paid a bond, but it still hasn't enabled that to be resolved.
It's likely that this outstanding matter, its time has gone for long enough that we should formally write requesting action to be taken on it by the enforcement department. Add our local pressure from a safety perspective.
It's absolutely fine. The cynic in me says there's probably a list as long as your arm of things that they need to do, which this will sit way down or certain way during that list. And I wouldn't be surprised if the counterparty here is probably a special purpose vehicle and probably won't see the light of day of that particular contractual party, but who knows? That's me just being cynical. So expectation-wise, I would think we probably have to have expectations carefully managed.
But it's not going to do any harm.
If the council turns up and says, so this planning permission is invalid, the developer will think, well, are they going to send a bulldozer in to knock my house down? The answer is they're not.
They're already sold.
So that's an issue.
Okay. Coming back to things that we can do, I know you said, I think it was at the parish meeting or in a document, that the issue of drains, road, rainwater drains in the villages to be addressed in a more comprehensive manner. There are countless drains that water is not even, it's flowing across, it's not going into,
you mean highway ones? There have been some highway drains that they have decided that they can no longer safely clean, I mean, clean them for years without closing the road. And for a while, what they did was, when they found one of these, they said, we can't claim this one because it needs a road closure. We'll come back in 6 months or 18 months' time and see if it's any different. And surprisingly, the drain was in the same place and the road was the same. They have now decided that they will have a separate program of dealing with these drains that they don't believe they can clean as part of the normal cleaning process. And they are working their way around. They did a big batch of them in March, going to drains. They fall into two categories. They're in urban areas where there are persistently vehicles parked and they can never get to them because they're parked. And then they're narrow roads in villages in the countryside where there isn't room for a vehicle to pass the drain. But they are now, after some pressure, they are now working their way around those. And they did a batch in March. Don't remember whether or not I did any Nashwell in March.
Well, Bear Lane and Kingsland Way and the High Street have got drains that water does not empty into.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What's supposed to happen is if they are full of mud, then the drains sucker can't do anything, and they are supposed to be, at that time they are supposed to be recorded, and they send some guys along with a shovel. But it takes some time for the guys and the shovels to turn up in those circumstances. It takes longer in the summer than it does in the winter, because the people who dig the drains out are the people who cut the grass. So they cut the grass in the summer and they dig the drains out in the winter, is the theory. There is also a problem in that some of the drains are not on their database of highway guys. And if they're not on their database, then they don't clean them. So where they're not on, where there are gullies that are not on, we can get them out. There's a whole bunch added in Newnham, because half the gullies in Newnham they allegedly didn't know about. And then they'll add them all and we'll clean them. So some of them may fall into that category. And you discover that if you try and report them, you discover there is a little coloured dot on the map where you're going to report again.
Yeah, I must admit, I've never had a problem with that.
Right.
The ones that, because my modus operandi is to always take a photograph of it.
Right.
A contextual photograph, so that you can see where it is. And even ones that aren't actually identified on the system. That said, one gets two responses. The vast majority of them say, you know, our program is 18 months or, you know, whatever it is, half the time they do now for. The only one that I ever have success with in terms of the Kingsland Way ones is to slot in the photograph of the sandbags outside the house at the bottom, mm-hmm. because that's the one thing that kicks them into action, is flooding the properties.
Yes.
So that's a useful technique.
Yeah, you should always report flooding property rather than flooding roads. So the response you get that says, we'll deal with this, essentially means they're not going to send someone out to fix it immediately. And in most cases, it doesn't need to be fixed the next week. It's not like a big hole in the middle of the road about to fill in before someone falls into it. If there are, it comes back to, and this is kind of annoying, but it all comes back to, they only fix things if people tell them about them. And they don't always fix them if people tell them about them, but if you don't tell them, they don't fix them.
In terms of an action point, the little green cards, which I noticed there are actually still a pile, I think, over on the post office table over there, encouraging residents to report these problems. Perhaps we should put on the accelerator on those again.
So there was a village that did a gully survey. They went around and they identified all the gullies in the village that they believed were a problem. And then we had a meeting with Highways, because it wasn't reporting this one, and then sometime later someone reporting that one. We're able to get some systemic issues dealt with. So that was an approach that one village used.
I think it's worth.
Is that something we could?
I think we should.
Do you think that would actually work if we did it here?
Yeah, I mean, if it transpires as only three blocks in the whole village, then it would help you. But if you go around and you can show that there's a significant number, then yeah, I think we can then probably get Derek Gerrard to come along. And say, so we've got these issues, what can you do about sorting these out?
Okay, let's do it.
Is it easy to detect if the gully's blocked?
Well, yeah, some there's grass going out the top.
Well,
you know, some stones get washed in, and you know, they could end up, you know, in places where it's not visible, they could still be blocked.
The ones that are really blocked are mud, earth, right to the top.
So the answer is yes, it's pretty obvious where the gully is.
No, there'll be some where the water, some where the water comes out of them when it rains. There'll be some where the water runs very slowly. And they'll probably be because of the pipe leading from the gully is blocked.
All right, so it's best to get it after
a day. But a gully survey, if you're up for it, a gully survey was something that worked in one village. They printed off the gully map from the website. That's not easy to do, but they found some way of doing it.
Just doing bits.
And then they went round and they marked all the ones that were a problem across the whole village, and then were able to meet it.
Well, and you're being built on a slope, it's not rocket science that the muck washes down from the top of the hill and then zapping the ones at the bottom.
Well, I mean, we don't have to complete the survey in the next week. if we give ourselves time, we can use the various publicity. Because residents will know a drain outside their house or near their house is regularly flooding. And so, you know, the more input we get to help us complete a comprehensive analysis of the situation, then all to the good.
There are some very keen residents in
whilst that's true, it's a good thing not to spread it out over too long a time. But this, if you spread it out over 6 months, the response you may get is when we fix that one since you did this survey. So if you're able to say over the last 6 weeks, whatever, we've looked at them all and these are the ones that are a problem.
Yeah.
Then it's going to be very difficult for them to say no, we've solved most of those problems.
Okay.
But you don't need to do it all in a week, right?
We'll do that.
Okay. Let me know when you've done that, then we'll sort it out.
Okay.
Just on a somewhat related note, I have asked them to clean all the debris off the roads around the chicane where it's all collected there. So you were saying that it's covered up the road markings.
It has, and that's another case. So it came down the slope, and it's completely subsumed all of the road markings and everything, and booking up down the far end and all the way around the corner of the west end.
Okay,
right. Okay. The one thing that hasn't worked very well is the gravel trap at the bottom of Parker Chill. So that needs to be kept up. The only issue with that, of course, is that Highways have now decided that it isn't Highways asset, it's a right of way asset. Yes. So I think the reporting by that we'd established might anyway.
Well, that might sometimes write the way better at getting these things fixed.
Okay.
Similar matter. Has the signpost outside Westbury House where there's on that green of land up that opposite?
It's a particularly annoying one because I reported it twice, about 3 months apart, when it was just at this phase, and then it actually descended into the road.
Yeah.
And they still haven't done anything about it.
But it's been reported.
Yeah.
It's a signpost. It's a hint with the difference. Yeah. They take ages.
I was worried it was quite dangerous, actually. It's actually not so dangerous now.
So we had a problem in that the one with the Odyssey Junction, because it had partly fallen down, meant you couldn't see. And we managed to get them to remove that and then put a new one back. But replacing signposts takes ages. But then we'll get around to it eventually.
Okay. Thank you, Steely and Tom. Let's move on to 126, reports from working groups. Bitter picking, Norton.
Talked about this at previous parish council meetings. There's now an advert in the Ashwell Hub, it's out on the ABN, and I'll be posting some posters around the village this weekend. So we're currently in the publicity phase, and we're going ahead on the 20th as planned.
Right, great. 1262. Planning advisory, any update on the 106?
No, I contacted, I sent the note to Alex Howard. He was on holiday until yesterday. And if he doesn't reply within a few more days, I'll send a reminder because I want to open up a question of Section 106 contributions and what actually isn't acceptable in terms of convincing arguments. That conversation started some time ago, but needs to be completed.
Okay. We've talked about how the housing survey, Woodland Housing Survey. Going on to the next item, the discussion about access to Ashwell Station and parking there. I did a note following the parish meeting about the issue as I see it, that fundamentally all the money needs to be spent in Cambridgeshire rather than in Hertfordshire, which is why I'm sceptical that arguments about 106 contributions from Hertfordshire is likely to receive any positive response. and why engaging with the Mordens and South Cams is the route that ought to be, is likely to be more fruitful if the case can be made for it, because arguably the population serving that area of South Cams is not high enough to justify the scale of investment required. But I understand from Jane that Guy Reed did some time ago, did have quite a substantial contact with the Mordens and the landowners in question about demand, routes to the station and also parking at the station and the planning implications of it, none of which frankly fall into responsibility of North Harts. I know that Elsie Whip have engaged, well, have prioritised routes to the station, and the issue for Ashwell and North Harts is qualifying to be regarded as a sustainable village in the absence of a continuous footpath that enables safe access to the station. But financially, the money is to be spent by South Cams. So I wonder if we should not have a further discussion with Guy Reed and pick up on channels of communication with Stephen Warden to get further update and how we progress contact with South Cams.
I think it's a very good idea. I mean, if Guy Reed has been involved and has shown some sort of interest in this, then it'd be silly to ignore what he's done already and kind of push him away, wouldn't it?
Graham can also point out that the survey of the number of cars parking both in the car park and out on the highways verges was undertaken by someone from Steeple Morgan, but that was pre-COVID, so a while ago, and that may have changed, I don't know.
Well,
so the data needs refreshing, but a survey was done.
I'm sure it does need refreshing, but just looking at the numbers of vehicles parked up there now, it seems to be at least as heavy as it was.
So quantitative data.
Well, I think it's, that's two related, but maybe separate matters, because I think, I don't know if anyone's ever done a demand survey for the walking cycle route. I mean, from the number of people I see that use it at the moment, the road, and you could say it's because there isn't a safe route, there aren't that many people that use it. So I don't know whether anyone's actually looked into how viable it is from usage point of view. And then there's also the car parking issue, which I was going to come on to in relation to the station and the impact potentially of Baldock on the station in Ashwell, where I think the feedback from Tom, perhaps from Urban and Civic, was that there's no cause, well, at the moment there's no evidence to suggest a causal link between the closure of roads accessing Baldock Station essentially in the future to the Ashwell, use of the Ashwell Station, the impact on local roads and things. I think that's another issue that I personally would like to push a bit harder, because I think if we don't push it, then Urban Civic won't flag that and they'll just say it's not an issue, therefore we'll never get a 106 contribution towards that. So that's maybe separate, but I think related as well.
But also the I believe there was a plan for a car park in the exchange for building houses up there. Is that all falling flat there?
I don't know. Time's moved on. I don't think it actually ever got to a successful conclusion.
My understanding is that there are, Jeremy Fordham wrote to the parish council on the basis of his proposed planning application to South Kent for conversion of the farmyard to 9 units. And his proposal was, as a part of that, he would offer some land for a cycle path. That was slightly confused by which side of the road the path was going to be and which of the Fording family actually had ownership of it. But aside from that, the principle did stand. I don't think that his proposals for the development, I'm not aware, No, the parish council wrote on several occasions, but this has gone on for at least 10 or 12 years. Parish council has written on every time that the opportunity has arisen and said that in principle they would always be supportive of anything that improved access to Ashmore Station. So that's done. The Jeremy Fordham must be 10, 12 years ago, in order to address the car parking issue, actually established on his land a car park, which operated for some time, quite successfully, I used to use it. And he was then presented with a very large business rights bill by Cambridge, and which didn't come to a happy conclusion, that he actually just withdrew the site. His view of it was that it would be a ticket on a non-profit making basis.
Well,
that's
the history. If everyone's happy, let's engage with Gary to sort of update where we've got to and what else can be done.
I think it's to just say there's to for me there's two separate ones. There's the cycle pedestrian link.
Yeah.
And then there's the impact of the urban civic development in the 10 to 15 years of the development of Baldock and the impact on station parking more generally, which probably isn't, they're probably not mutually exclusive, but they're probably not completely correlated because people are driving to park in at the station because of Baldock being closed or limited access are probably not people that necessarily would cycle to the station in absence of that link.
Graham, if I may quickly as well, it's some years since I've looked at a Cambridgeshire local transport plan, but the rural version of that actually included Ashmore Station and contains words to the effect of, that it should facilitate access to the city of Cambridge from Ashmore Station. So that's another little kind of chink in there.
Okay. Yeah. Well, yes. People take account of that and let's engage on that basis.
Certainly, you know, that undermines the importance of getting the Morgans on board as well, because they're also Cambridgeshire residents.
So we'll invite what Guy to set up a working committee or working group.
Yeah.
So otherwise, we're just going to keep talking about it, nothing like
that. Exactly.
And particularly with Urban Civic, on that point, the time is now, because the more that they continue without actually us putting our hands up saying there is a causal link or there will be a causal link, then we won't have our hand at the whatever it's called, the begging bowl out for a 106 contribution.
And I think, you know, we shouldn't be shy in involving Edward Lee at North Arts, because he lives in Cambridgeshire, works in Hertfordshire, and he is aware of the issue. And I think supported. Okay. Trees and hedges, there's thinking to
what it's small gains as well.
Yeah.
No problems with small gains, but I know.
Okay.
Apart from being too wet. All the other planning, tree planning, conservation area, etc. all seem to be okay. Can't see any problems. The only thing was they wanted to cut the laurel hedge down by 1 metre, which is fair enough, but as it's nesting season, they have to take extra care not to cause problems, because otherwise it's quite a hefty fine.
Yeah.
So that's the only problem I can see.
Yes, it's out through people's doors, up on the website. The only thing that needs doing now is to get copies up to people who've left the village but still wanted to keep in touch. We habitually give them a copy. Believe it or not, work has started on the yearbook 2025. We've already got one over it. And a report from the flea market. So it never ends, basically.
I was going to refer to the zero carbon
group in working groups, but I'll bring it in under under 133.1 as part and parcel of that. Planning matters. The old rectory, that's a request for the erection of a detached greenhouse. Does anyone have any thoughts on that?
No objections.
No, I can't see a problem.
No objections. No. All the agreement on that. And 18 Ashwell Street.
No.
No, we've got a couple of thoughts.
Yeah, a couple of thoughts. Yeah, the applicant, sorry, the application has just gone in, it's dated 26th of March. There are no neighbour comments, but it's early days yet. Now, I mean, looking at the plan, this isn't much to look at, to be honest. It seems to be consistent with the style and surroundings, so there's no real arguments with that. It's an extension to the side to which there's a twitchel running through. It's really the extension at the back that could potentially cause problems. It projects quite a long way out from the line of that terrace, which is why I was particularly interested in seeing what sort of comments we might get from the neighbours.
Well, there was a previous application 12 or 24 months.
Yeah.
Previously, very similar, wasn't it?
Not, and it wasn't for the same scale. But I believe it, my memory served me, it was only to the ground floor. Is that right? Was it two storey then?
No, in fact, from a very quick look at it, I thought that the applications were pretty similar. I'm
right.
Not quite sure why there's a second application. Maybe I'm missing something. I think the height, that there were certain.
Yeah, because I had to look for some paper online.
But essentially, the previous application, which was granted, was for a two-storey side extension, a front porch, and a single-storey rear extension.
Ah, right, okay.
Yeah. The parish council objected on the grounds that loss of parking, the parking space at the front, and the potential adverse impact on the neighbour. Because, as you correctly said, North Harts didn't agree and permission was granted in 2019.
So, why are we getting it back again?
Jimmy, it wasn't actually.
Maybe it's out of time.
Yeah,
it'll be timed in 2019.
It might be. The front porch is slightly different this time, but I can't see that that's a major issue, to be honest. But essentially, it's still a two story, single door at the back extension. The only comment online at the moment is from the Rights of Way officer with regard to taking into account the twitchel. That's a fairly standard one. We shouldn't block it, etc.
Yeah. So, if we think we've got a couple of weeks to respond on that.
Yeah,
I mean, it's going from a two-bed to a four-bed house, which isn't consistent with ASH2B, the neighbourhood plan policy, where we support one, two, and three-bed developments. And that's a four-bed one. So, yeah, I mean, I think it would be helpful to wait until we see if there are any neighbour comments because of the potential impact to the back of the house.
Well,
when's the deadline
coming up?
Well, it could be at least another 14 days, and I can ask for an extension if you want to.
I think you should object, particularly now that we've mentioned that we objected before. I really can't remember this one, sorry.
I think you asked for it to be called in before. Okay, let me get what you actually said. You made a presentation to the planning committee. Right, Ashwell Parish Council asked its ward council to call in this application for reasons given. In other words, impact on the neighbours due to the sloping site conditions and also concern about access along the neighbouring pathway and the future impact of on-street parks.
God, I must be.
Councillor Tyson had already made a statement about the specific circumstances that make the proposed rear extension problematic. like to draw your attention to the photographs of the site, emphasize the land at the back of the house falls away steeply. It's a 1-in-10 slope. So the volume of the rear extension will be greater than on a level site. High level provides high viewpoint over neighbouring gardens and impact still greater because it has crossed the full width of the property.
Why don't we go back and refer to that previous objection and say that, you know, in view of this, that our response is as that submitted previously, but we are aware that the view of North Harts was
it's a bit of a
this stuff. Yeah. I mean, we're not going to change our minds in a couple of weeks' time, even if there's no neighbour objection, because those grounds apply now as they do today.
Yeah.
Well, let's just refer.
If you see it's a neighbour objection.
There was one, I think, certainly to us.
Well, there was an objection to us from the next door neighbour, precisely because of the overlooking and overshadowing business, but it didn't go to North Harts.
It wasn't sent off to North Harts. If we get anything else, then I think we need to go back in the same vein. But if we don't want North Harts to approve it, then we will have to find good arguments to support them. We'll have to look at it again and see what the pros and cons are.
Well, if I'm interpreting correctly,
I haven't had a chance to look at it, if I'm honest, so I wouldn't mind an opportunity to have a review and drop people a line if we can do that.
You know, if we say something, it needs to be, you know, properly evaluated, doesn't it?
Let's check the detail against the application in 2019.
See how different it
is. See if there's any differences. If there aren't, then I think for reasons of consistency, because nothing else has changed there, we should submit the same criticism.
Right. Would you mind sending the link around to the previous decision? Thank you.
Okay, so that'll be a starting sample, but then we'll just go over it again.
Okay. Tree consultations, 51 Silver Street.
One thing I wasn't that involved with, but I'm interested in, was the removal of the trees at Claybush Meadow. Has there been any progress on?
We haven't heard anything.
No, we haven't heard anything.
I'm not sure whether actually any trees have specifically been removed. There's something heavily pruned. Which would be confused if you know. But it's been made, you know, through North Harts.
I'm again aware of it. I saw that this, so we haven't done this.
So you're okay with 51 Silver
Street? Yeah.
And 25 Kingston Way. Just care and how it's done.
Yeah.
Okay. We need to note the no objection response to the Bushman Strike application. What's about Village Hills? And the summary. We report about Garden Lane. So reports from HR, reports from committees, HR committee. I can confirm we've had now had since my notes ever today, we've now had a signed contract from Sally Roberts. So she'll be joining us from the 23rd of April, which is excellent news. And Jane has agreed to
don't stay on a good period of time to provide adequate training. Thank you.
Well done. And thank you, Jim.
Reports from parish councils on premises and other responsibilities. The Springs, Martin isn't here. I think the main item is reference to the falling tree at the Springs. I think you, Jane, were suggesting that we should take the views of Chris Jennings into account. Decide whether it's more environmentally appropriate to leave it where it is, or to move it to somewhere else, or to remove it.
I've done Martin into a pretty picture, actually, because he actually hasn't been able to get down and have a look at it. There are actually two elements to it, which I didn't realise until I went and had a kind of a poke down around there. One tree has fallen, so imagine you're crossing the stepping stones from coming from the three-ton side, and it's therefore on your left-hand side, so it's downriver from the main basin, which is good news. It's not the first time this has happened. Ever since I've lived here, there have been these trees I've gone over, and you can see the remnants of logs on them across the Springs anyway. There's an environmental point of view, and there's also an aesthetic point of view, because you can't see down the river quite the same way as you used to. There are actually two elements to it. The tree that has gone over has probably gone over because it has insufficient roots because of the erosion on the banks. And that's one of the reasons why the temporary fencing has been put up post-COVID erosion issues, to actually reinforce the banks along there. Well, this one's a bit late for it, it's gone over. And it's taken with it on the other side a stump that was covered with ivy. So there's two sections of it. If the environmentalists feel that it's a good idea, you could, in theory, push both of those back so that you clear the main course of the river. It's not impeding the water at the moment, and it will eventually just rot and move away. So it's not an easy task to move it. It's probably, you know, people with waders or getting very wet and some big ropes to pull it back. When some years ago there was one that went over in the main basin, the tree surgeon actually had a huge crane, one of Paul Waters' cranes, that went over the top of the railings, picked it up and moved it around the corner. But you can't get a machine into this
part. So for me, there are two issues here.
Yeah.
One is safety, and the second one is, because it's an SSSI, it's the conservation aspect and the environmental aspect.
Absolutely not. And so the first thing we did when it happened was check out whether there is any hazard or safety issue. Right. And the view is held by everyone I've spoken to who's looked at it, and that there is no safety or hazard.
Okay, so.
Yes, children could possibly go and climb, not if they wanted to, but they can climb any tree, to be honest.
I've ensured it's been notified.
Okay.
Sure.
Does anybody disagree with that?
I always think about buying insurers of anything,
right,
just in case.
Who gave us that advice about the safety?
Sure. I mean, it's not really forward anywhere.
I've asked three different people who independently notified me that it had happened. I said immediately, do you think there's any safety issue, before I'd been having a look at it? And they said, no, not at all, because this has happened routinely over the years.
Who were these people?
Three parishioners, independent parishioners. So I spoke to Martin, and Martin said, I don't think there's any problem because this has happened before. We've had trees over.
All right, so he's got experience of this happening. Yeah.
Well, yeah, this is about the fourth tree that's come down in the last 3 years.
Why couldn't you just take a chainsaw to it and chop it in half and then drag it onto the bank?
Yeah, can do.
Because I've seen other half chopped down trees dragged onto the picnicky area.
Absolutely. The ecological point about that is, if you put that tree on top of where you're trying to regrow the banks, you might not want to do that. So, but yeah. And does it need moving at all? In the past, they haven't been moved at all, trees that have fallen over. I
presume it could flow down, bits of could flow down the river and impact on homeowners like the mayor.
Absolutely. Yeah, so that's a
something needs to happen, I would think.
Yeah.
I personally, I don't know much from an ecological perspective. I thought it needs, rather than the crane, it probably just needs some of the chainsaws to cut it into bite-sized chunks and
chop it out. Sorry, was that on the ecological point of view? Was the recommendation to remove it then?
No, they haven't expressed it. No, they haven't got the information.
You can't just leave it there.
I like to leave them there, aren't
you? Well, doesn't Jane say they're happy? Previously, they're happy there.
Yes, that's right. But it's something that somebody who's suitably qualified ecologically needs
to. It's artificially cleared anyway, that whole basin. I mean, because it's not, you don't just leave it to grow, and otherwise you wouldn't be able to see any water or whatsoever. So leaving it there doesn't feel,
I mean, if it was me, I would get Natural England, if they're willing to come out and have a look at it and say, do this, do that. Natural England are responsible for the triple SI.
They can also further advise on the safety aspect of it as well, because
absolutely. The last two times that trees have come down, and one of them fortuitously was about a week before when the big one came down in the storm, about a week before the Natural England guy came, that was due to come out anyway. And he said, absolutely fine, do what you want with it, not a problem. And it was the first time, I think, in 4 years. They meant to do an annual visit. It was the first time in 4 years. And every time that I'd contacted them, they said, this is not a site that we have any issues with whatsoever. We have far greater priorities to get on with.
Right.
When was
the
last time they came?
February 2022. And they're due again next month. They're booked to come in.
So we could ask them next month.
Yeah, okay.
I don't think there's any panic in me.
Do we want to get a view from Chris James as well?
I'll ask any of the ones.
Yeah.
Can
you
see
the
tree
surgeon? No, the tree surgeon. I mean, Fred Burkett of Blue Tree Company is the person who's always given very good advice on the spraying, because he was born and brought up here in the house. Like, quite a high level tree surgeon. Chris was the tree officer for Welland and Hatfield Council for many years, so she's got quite a good deal on the next one.
Good, yeah. Yeah, we can get a couple of words from her as well.
But I mean, interesting question about insurance. I mean,
I would say
of them would never, ever felt the need to turn this kind of site to contact the insurance companies. You know, if the site isn't insured, is there any liability? You do your risk assessment on it, and no there isn't.
No, I just imagine kids maybe going down there playing, climbing on it, and one of them falling off, and then you get an insurance claim. But
that's true of the entire site, Chris. This makes no difference.
True.
Mary's Church, I'll give them a moment to report that agenda. Recreation ground, we've already discussed. Small gains, you covered, David. War Memorial, insurance quote, we're on the case of giving an update on that.
So the cleaning and the small repairs.
Yeah. Cemetery?
No, other than Nikki's had a real good training on it. It's been the busiest quarter for burials ever since up in Clark. Absolutely.
Must be something in the water.
Street furniture, litter bin review. Nothing to note there.
Nothing.
Okay. On seats, I gather that the plaque has now been, for the wedding, the plaque has been agreed, plaque's been ordered for the new seat, and we're awaiting a delivery date for the new seat.
In relation to the bench survey that I did and the ones that need some attention for almost into the new financial year, do you want to minute that? I'll come back with some suggestions of ones that need attention. Now we've got a budget to play with. There aren't many, but there's three or four.
Yeah.
How about the possibility of a seat down at Small Games Lane? We're getting lots of mums and dads down there for the football. Yes.
One
put it on your list. Oh yes, I've just been hopeful. more than one thing, yes.
Let's not need budget for it.
There is a budget,
but prioritize it when we've got details.
Let me have a look.
Okay, yeah. On to finance and governance. Budget tracking. Yeah, we've seen the numbers for March, they're provisional.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, picking up on that point on 132, we've got the audit requirement details and the final accounts for 2024 need to be completed by June with appropriate allocated reserves. So we'll come back to that in the next month or two. 133, the question community groups. Right, this is where, let me talk on behalf of the Zero Carbon Ashwell group. I'll need someone else to cover the fire loss, but I'm going to suggest that that group is formally brought into the a parish council working group. We've had numerous working groups operate before the parish council. The reason for that is that the biggest item that this is being formed to prepare for is an application for a grant from Community Energy England to do an energy feasibility study. And that involves a very significant sum of money, up to £40,000. And their preference is for a significant community group like a parish council or a CBS community benefit scheme to make that application rather than an individual or a small community.
Yeah.
So that's my reason. And so I'm happy to leave the room so that you can take a view on that statement and the request for high cost. And I'll stay out for the community land trust item, which is detailed below. Then perhaps someone will take the chair in my absence.
I'm happy to chair it, yeah.
Okay, thank you. Let me know.
Okay, so for the hire of the room, I don't have a particular issue with that. I think it's a relatively small incidental cost, and I think it's proportionate and relevant. So I'm happy to
close that. Yeah, me too. Yeah.
And then on the second, which is the cost and membership, I'd make a similar comment, I think, on that one. The only question I'd have, I suppose, referring to the earlier question about at what point does the CLT become its own self-funding body?
So we're talking about the zero carbon.
We're talking about zero carbon, and we're also talking about the membership for the CLT network.
Oh, right, okay. Well, I need to leave on that one.
Yeah, can we stick to
the carbon? Oh, I thought sorry.
So, the other point that Graham made up leaving respect to zero carbon was that we should incorporate that working group as a working group as a council.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yeah, at the moment, you've had what you've called an electric vehicle charging group, which Ian and Graham are members of. His proposal is now, because they've got many more people interested and they've decided to change the name of it, it's become Zero Carbon Ashwell, and that Zero Carbon Ashwell group becomes a working group of the parish council. So the EV charging group will cease to be the Zero Carbon Ashwell group.
And the reason we're doing that is so that we can badge it as a parish council working group
to facilitate applications for grants.
That's correct, yeah. I advise that if you do that, that you write some terms of reference for the group as you do with other working groups, so that the relationship is clearly defined as to who does what and who's responsible for what and what have you. If it's a working group, it has no powers to spend money on, without coming back to the parish council and all that kind of thing.
Okay.
But that should be defined.
So it falls outside of the CLT then?
Oh, yeah, yes.
Oh, a completely different group, yeah.
Okay, I thought they were both the same.
No, sorry, the confusion is because of Greg going out of the room once rather than twice. That's
got it. Okay.
Okay, so.
So I'm happy to propose that on 133.1.
Yeah. So it's a kind of morphing of the existing EV group plus a kind of widening of it anyway. So
that's fine. There's even less confusion if it's not part of the CLT. So
yeah, no, that's completely fine. Okay. But not so that needs to lead to, we need to go on to the CLT.
Okay. So Jane, in terms of the CLT, how do other people deal with it?
That's a very good question. If anybody wants to know how other people will deal with this, I strongly suggest you look on the CLT network. Right. And there's a big map in the country, and it shows you where all these groups are. And if you do a little bit of Googling, which I did when we first looked into this, and I looked kind of half a dozen or so. Yeah, you've got to come back anyway. Chris has asked a question about how does other CLTs do this. And there seems to be, to start with, CLTs are active for different reasons. Quite a few of them are for social housing and they've gone that route. Some of them are for the village shop or the park. And combined with the reason for saying that is because I think that has influenced the route that they've gone in terms of how their relationship with the parish council starts. There are one or two that have been formed independently by an independent community group, not a parish council, but by and large, most of them are parish council generated, a couple of them district council generated. Some of them, the group has remained absolutely underneath the umbrella of the parish council throughout, including the same people.
Yeah.
There was one in North Devon that has done that, and I think Soham has as well, actually. All of them start off with the group being within the parish council. And then when they've got a project, depending on how big that project is, that's the stage that they seem to have separated from the parish council. In other words, when they've got something to do, something meaty to get and to get some money involved, that's the difference. And at that stage, I think most, but not all, have morphed away from the parish council that they originally were started by.
I think my anticipated point of separation is when there is a project of a type that involves money. So that when money comes in to fund the activities of it, it then will move off to be self-governing. During the establishment phase, it has no money, and that's where the role of the parish council comes in to facilitate community engagement.
Should it have a budget that we, to stop the drip kind of concern of, I suppose, money's being requested and requested and requested, at what point that becomes a threshold that becomes sort of too high? Shouldn't we be saying in sort of in principle £500 or £1,000 or 200? I don't know what number is sort of sufficient to.
I think in preparing the budget, we took account of the likely annual costs.
Yeah.
As indeed we did when we set up, when we were actually going through the legal.
Is there a separate line item?
Yeah, that's a good question. The relevancy of the budget is the section 137, which is for community support. And up until about 3 or 4 years ago, the parish council used to sit down when they did their budget and said, right, we're going to give the village hall this, and we're going to give the village with that, and rural district transport, we're going to give that, and actually kind of do it out like that. they then changed their thinking. They said, no, what we're going to do, rather than us proactively say we're going to give this, that and the other, we will put a sum of money in the budget, a round figure, and then we will let community groups come to us and ask us for the money. And they felt that was a better way to do it. So they wait for the village hall or here for the post office or rural district.
What was the budget for this?
£3,000 in this current financial.
So I think we keep an eye on that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I suppose one could argue that there was merit in keep coming back, because you know exactly what money is for and why you're giving it, whereas if you give them a couple of quid grant, you'd have no control over it.
I mean, the most significant figure that we had identified was actually indemnity insurance. Okay. Now, I think our view has shifted on that until there is an asset for which funds would become available, there's actually nothing to require indemnity insurance. So the indemnity insurance would get covered by the funds raised related to that asset. So it's unlikely that the parish council is going to be asked to fund that. So it's community network and room hire for meetings.
Yeah. I think we should I personally put forward a proposal that we do accede to the request, but I think we should make a separate line item in the budget so we can report how much is going to the CLC, just to keep an eye on it. And I think
that's a good point. We did that with the neighbourhood plan group, actually. We kept a separate tally of how much the neighbourhood plan group was.
I think particularly in relation to kind of at the moment hasn't been a great uptake in terms of financial interest in the CLC. And so, I think it should be monitored and ensure that it's proportionate to the level of interest that's been shown in it.
I haven't done the figures, to be honest. Off the top of my head, there are probably between a dozen and 16 people paid out, and I've got about another similar number on the interest list. But that's also last week.
Yeah, but for example, there are only two people interested in the whole thing, and it seems disproportionate to spend thousands of pounds on meetings and memberships. Yeah. If it looks as though it's going to get traction and take on a project that might be funding to actually cover, because that's the other big issues to the funding for these projects, then clearly relatively minor amounts of money are proportionate.
Until a project is identified or comes forward, I think interest is going to be a little bit subdued.
Yeah, so I think we just need to have in mind to that.
The other aspect of it here is because the parish council doesn't own a meeting room, all of these groups have to come with their begging bowl to pay the church to sit in here, to be honest. Most villages, parish council owns the village hall, and the community cubes, they either charge them or they don't.
You go to the pavilion.
Sorry?
Pavilion is free.
Well, yes, we used to sit and shiver in there because a certain past chairman of the parish council was too mean to pay the 8 quid at the time. We used to just sit in there and shiver.
So I've put forward a proposal that we sort of, I don't know what the wording is, but accept that request. And so I would vote you well, put forward a proposal for that.
Yeah, and I'll need to look into it.
Graham's happy to vote on that.
Yeah.
But let's keep a separate tally of
CLTs. There is a separate section 106 column anyway. 137 column anyway. There's a so few things in it. But I think
well, thanks. Hi.
Okay, last item 113.4, weight and rethinking the footpath, which we last reprinted probably 4 or 5 years ago.
What members on a while?
We had a quote from the printers for 2000.
3,000 copies for just under £400.
I propose to accept that.
It's a really nice document, actually.
Yeah. They're very popular, actually. The The yep. caravan club uses the lock of the room, and must have used the lock of them. I'll take them to the tourist office in Kitchen.
Do the pubs have them as well?
Yeah, they just lost that, yeah.
That brings us to the end of the meeting. It's to close it at 9:10. Thank you all for attending.
Thank you.